Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite podcast, where editors of Managed Healthcare Executive chat with healthcare executives in the C-Suite and professionals. Our conversations are about the most important issues facing American healthcare today, such as its cost, effectiveness, delivery, organization, and its fairness. Listen in, learn a lot. Hi everyone, my name is Brianna Contreras and I'm Associate Editor of Managed Healthcare Executive. This week, I met Stephanie Mercado, CEO and Executive Director of the National Association for Healthcare Quality, also known as NACU. Stephanie and I discussed NACU's mission to improve healthcare quality and what improvements as well as shortcomings have been made. She also shared what steps need to be taken in healthcare as a whole to continue improving the quality of care. Hello, Stephanie. How are you doing today?
I'm good, thank you. I appreciate you having me.
Oh, no problem. Thank you for making the time for us. So to get started, I wanted to jump in by saying, you know, there are many organizations working on quality. So could you tell us, you know, our listeners, readers, viewers, about the National Association for Healthcare Quality, or NACU, and, you know, how what you do may differ from other organizations working on improving healthcare quality, you know, such as the National Quality Forum and the LeapFrog Group?
Sure, happy to. So NACU, as you mentioned, National Association for Healthcare Quality, has a really clear focus and mission, and that is to support healthcare quality professionals and those individuals advancing healthcare quality, safety, and value. And our position is really focused on workforce development around healthcare quality competencies. So when you think about NQF, they are largely focused on measure development. When you think about LeapFrog, they collect data, they analyze it, they publish it, and of course they make it very transparent with the LeapFrog scores and the safety scores. And what NACU does is really to support the workforce and the profession that is also sort of in the mix with the National Quality Forum, LeapFrog, and many other groups. So we're a competency organization, a skills organization, and a workforce development organization.
Okay, great, thank you. So as you may know, the 2001 Institute of Medicine's Crossing the Quality Chasm is now 20 years old. So how much progress has been made in crossing the chasm, and where have there been improvements in healthcare quality and maybe some shortcomings?
Sure. So I think that we definitely can say that we have improved clinical care delivery in a lot of ways. We have also, I think, made meaningful improvements and advancements in payment models. Long way to go there, but I am pleased to see that we are beginning to focus much more on the outcome than the activity behind healthcare delivery. And so that's very positive. And I think that one of the biggest things positively that came out of crossing the quality chasm was really the focus on quality and safety, and how important that was. I feel like that publication, along with several others, has really, really helped to clear the path for even more important work in healthcare quality, safety, and now equity and value. So really removed a lot of barriers and helped to get people really on board with where we needed to go.
Lovely, thank you. Now, any thoughts on the reasons for the areas of progress and the reasons for the areas that have lagged behind?
Yeah, so when I think about crossing the quality chasm to AIR as Human, the quadruple aim and the triple aim that came before it, I think that those are critical work products that have been pushed into the healthcare environment and really, you know, cause people to pause and think about why we do what we do. And like I said, had really eliminated a lot of the friction that we experience in advancing quality and safety. So I feel like those have been really positive. The things I'd say that are related to why we haven't maybe gone far enough, fast enough. Why is safety still such a concern here in the United States and our healthcare delivery system? Why is the cost, you know, continue to escalate in a way that is really unsustainable over the near and long term? Mm-hmm. I think part of it is because we have been focused so much on what needs to change in healthcare. And like I said, as evidenced by all of those sort of path clearing publications that really helped us see what we need to focus on. But I think the thing that we really need to focus on now and what's been missing is a lot around the how. How do we do this work, right? Everybody's bought in. Everybody understands that, you know, quality and safety, equity and value are huge priorities for healthcare. But actually mechanically breaking that down and understanding how to improve that in healthcare delivery is not easy. And so that's where NICU really comes in with the skills and competency development that help really move the how forward and help people understand what it takes to have a high functioning quality program within an entire healthcare system, within a payer organization and others.
That's great, thank you. Now, what has the COVID-19 pandemic revealed about healthcare quality in this country? And have there been quality problems in the direct care of COVID-19 patients?
It's taught us a lot. You could probably have a whole podcast on that topic.
Right.
If you were so inclined. So a couple things. I mean, I think that related to the pandemic and what has it taught us, it's taught us that we do incident command really, really well. And I think that we have also learned how to live in a crisis command culture. So previously, you know, incident command was reserved for events, you know, hurricanes, active shooters, you know, things that sort of were hopefully, you know, one-off and finite events. And the pandemic has really put us in much more of a marathon than a sprint in terms of dealing with this crisis that we are facing. And so I've been really encouraged by seeing the barriers that have been removed, some old barriers and things that got in the way of productive healthcare delivery really had to be removed in the process of dealing with COVID, right? Mm-hmm. Long decision times, bureaucratic decision-making processes and more really had to go by the wayside in order for us to address the urgent and important demands that, you know, were brought to us through COVID. I'm also really excited that we proved that as a nation and certainly in healthcare delivery, if there is a will, there is a way. And I'm really, really proud of the way the healthcare workforce showed up and did their job. And it has been hard. It continues to get harder. They are fatigued. They are worn down. But they are really heroes among us. And I think that's something else to really think about. So interestingly, I live not too far from a firehouse. And so when I hear those sirens ring out, I think about why a firefighter runs into a burning building when everybody else is sort of standing back and, you know, looking in horror, running in the other direction. And what I think that happened with the healthcare workforce is that they ran into the burning building when no one else knew what to do and everyone else was scared. The workforce, you know, hadn't experienced this before. And I know that they had, you know, fears and anxiety, and they still do about this, but they were really the heroes. So if there's a will, there's a way. And this profession, the whole workforce, and I think specifically I represent the profession of healthcare quality, really stepped up and did a great job. Some of the challenges you asked about, you know, clinical delivery in healthcare, you know, reports out just in the last week or so that infection rates are up, you know, across the board. And that's really interesting because I remember, you know, right when COVID hit, you know, the March, April timeline 2020, a lot of people thought that infection rates in hospitals in general would just go way down because they were so sensitive to the mask wearing and the hand washing and all of these things. And it turns out that didn't happen. And I think in large part that is due to a stressed workforce And also the fact that the quality staff in some cases were actually brought to the front lines. And so some of those regular processes and procedures that occur in a health system on a day-to-day basis to manage and improve against infection control measures just simply couldn't happen because they were in a, right here, right now, solve the problem in front of us, and that was COVID. And so I think that there have been, clearly challenges with that and largely related to workforce.
Right. Thank you. Now, next I wanted to talk about your professional assessment survey. So I believe you collected just over 1600 responses. Could you describe the population of healthcare quality populations you surveyed?
Sure. So NACU, just by way of background, I'll share. So NACU has a membership of almost 9,000 individuals, and we also have the only accredited certification in healthcare quality, the CPHQ. And that's held by about 14,000 individuals worldwide, largely in the US. So those individuals comprise our database, along with about 20,000 other individuals who we call quality curious, who are really engaged with a lot of our content and what we're doing, but may not be members or CPHQs. So the interesting thing about the demographics of the people that we surveyed is that they are more like-minded than they are like-type. And that is very common in the profession of healthcare quality. Most people do not come into healthcare quality as a first profession. It's usually a second profession. They come from other backgrounds. Maybe they will come from clinical backgrounds. They may come from engineering backgrounds. They may come from project management backgrounds, change management backgrounds. And so, they're definitely more like-minded than like-type. But generally speaking, the people who responded to the survey largely focus most of their time on healthcare quality, meaning they're not in another role also, like a clinical care delivery role. They're largely focused on the administrative part of quality, which absolutely plays out in clinical practice. Most of them are at the director level of quality. And, then we see some above in the VP roles, and we've even had, SVP level and a couple CEOs, pop into that survey. Okay. And then certainly people who are graduating up in their quality career, so managers of healthcare quality, coordinators, et cetera. They largely come from hospital health systems, but we absolutely are seeing a growing market and interest from those people who are in managed care organizations, ambulatory settings, home health sometimes, and more. So like I said, more like-minded respondents than like-type, and so it goes with the profession of healthcare quality.
Okay, great. Now, what exactly was the survey measuring? And maybe can you share some takeaways?
I sure can. So let me back up for just a second and talk just a little bit about competencies and skills and quality and safety in general. So before NACU created and twice validated the healthcare quality competency framework, which has 8 dimensions, 29 competencies, and 486 skill statements that are stratified against foundational, proficient, and advanced levels, there had not been an articulation of what healthcare quality competencies and skills should be present, not only at the individual level, but at an organizational level. And that was a really, really important observation that NACU made, because we know that it is impossible to improve if we don't have something to measure against. And so, foundational to our efforts was absolutely, first defining that framework in 2018 and validating it, as I mentioned, in the market. So what question was it trying to answer? So we have amassed the first and only database in the world that can understand what healthcare quality professionals do at work in relationship to the healthcare quality competency framework. So largely healthcare quality professional development for individuals and healthcare quality systems process structure have been developed on the fly at a local level without the benefit of a standard. If you've seen one quality program, you've seen one quality program. And so what this initiative and really aimed to do was to understand what is going on out there relative to healthcare quality skills and competencies, who does what, and what is the DNA, if you will, of a high functioning individual who's pursuing a career in healthcare quality, and what is the DNA of the larger makeup of the profession as a whole? What are they doing well, and where do they have opportunities for continued advancement and improvement in their careers?
Wonderful, thank you. Mm-hmm. Now, it's found in the Journal for Healthcare Quality. You and your co-authors say it was unsurprising that about 85% of the respondents said performance and process improvement was part of their job function. Mm-hmm. You also mentioned it was unsurprising that population health and care transitions were not part of people's jobs. So was there a result that was surprising?
So I think the most surprising thing of all about this paper that we published is that there has never been a paper before published about healthcare quality competencies. And that's a really big deal.
Right.
Because we've been on this quality and safety journey for a really long time, and never has there ever been an assessment of the healthcare quality competencies that are present within the profession of healthcare quality and the people who are living and breathing healthcare quality every single day. And so that the most surprising thing to me was, is when we were doing our literature review, is that there was no other papers to reference on this point. This was a groundbreaking research that we did and really brought net new knowledge to the profession. And we expect others to definitely build on that. And we will be building on it quite a bit ourselves. Interestingly, if you sort of think about, well, why was that the first paper that has ever been published on the profession of healthcare quality and workforce competencies? Interesting to know is that the profession of healthcare quality does not have clear academic pathways like other healthcare professions and disciplines. So when you look at other disciplines and professions, you see medicine, you see nursing, health business administration, medical informatics, a lot of them, they do have those academic pathways, and some are more mature than others. But healthcare quality and safety until very recently did not have any of that. And so if you think about medicine as the example, the academic pathway for medicine, medical school, residency, fellowship, you have to have a license, you get board certified, you maintain the certification, you have continued professional development and lifelong learning, and that's it keeps going. But like I said, with healthcare quality, there has not been that. Just when I started NACU in late 2013, there were 4 graduate programs in quality and safety in the country, graduating a handful of individuals each year. In the tens, not the hundreds, not the thousands. And since that time, there are a lot more academic programs for graduate programs coming online. We see in the neighborhood of around 20 right now. And as a matter of fact, they have also used as a reference NACU's healthcare quality competency framework and are looking at that more advanced practitioner end for their training. But if you think about the gap that has been there, and the huge void that needs to be filled with formalized education and training. And you can see how broad it is, right? It's broad and it's deep in terms of all the things that need to really be covered. So that's really important to know, like, how did we get here and why would this be the first paper on this topic? Right. Because it has been largely, you know, an unmet need. I spoke with David Nash. He's the dean of the Jefferson School of Population Health. I'm sure you know him. And I remember a couple of years ago, he said to me, Stephanie, NACU has succeeded in identifying a problem, naming the problem, and solving for it in developing these healthcare quality competencies and really advancing workforce development in that area. So it's been a big void, and we're pleased to be taking a leadership position and filling up that vacancy.
Yeah, that's very wonderful to hear. And so actually kind of adding to that, you also mentioned there is no national standard or guidelines for the structure or personnel needed to support quality work within health organizations. Should there be?
We think there needs to be a lot more structure around that. Do they need to be in the form of regulated standards? I don't think that we need to regulate a structure within a department of a hospital, health system, managed care organization, et cetera. But I do think that there should be standards to make sure that people know what they need to know to do their job well. In other professions, there are standards associated with credentialing and licensure and board certification. And the same is not true yet for the profession of healthcare quality. And these people who do the work of healthcare quality are underpinning all the clinical care delivery and outcomes improvement in healthcare. And so, you know, from our perspective, we would like to see, you know, much more attention given to the fact that there is a competency set that is required. People should have it to do the work well, and they should continue to build on that moving forward. So I could see things, you know, NACU does have a certification, you know, and I could see others, you know, definitely, you know, coming into the mix to say, you can, it's not gonna be enough to tell us we have the skill, you have the skills. You're going to need to prove it because this is a big deal. And it is, like I said, a foundational underpinning of what we're trying to accomplish in healthcare.
Oh, definitely. Thank you. Now, lastly, what I have for you, if you can just share maybe, you know, a few steps that could be taken to improve healthcare quality in this country, can you share some?
Sure. So I think, you know, one of the really important things that we need to do is to measure what matters. There is a considerable amount of effort that is being spent in healthcare around measurement. And a lot of times we're chasing a metric that doesn't really matter. And instead of focusing on, you know, jumping through the hoops, checking the box, passing the test, I think we need to be really, really sure that we are focused on things that matter to the patient, that improve quality, safety, equity, and value. Additionally, I would say we have to focus on the patient. So for a very long time, the whole institution of medicine was built around the people who worked in medicine, right? The healthcare providers, the ancillary support, administration, and other systems within the organization. And I think that everyone's really coming to realize that the patient has to be at the center of the healthcare universe, and that it needs to be not as hard for the patient to navigate their own healthcare and to be a part of their own health. So I think that that's really important. And I also think that we need to spend more time than we have on focusing around things around systems, process, and structures for quality, safety, equity, and value. And we need to train our teams. So when we talk about workforce is the single biggest lever that we have to improve healthcare. It is the single largest expenditure in any healthcare delivery environment. It's labor. So it would make sense that if we are trying to improve healthcare, that we would focus on labor. And one other quick fact, there was a report that came out by McKinsey recently, and it said 54% of the entire world's workforce, including major sectors like healthcare, 54% will need upskilling or reskilling within 5 years. That is an enormous undertaking. Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to be really, really important for healthcare leaders to own that. I think that for too long, we've considered education and training sort of a, maybe it's a regulatory requirement, maybe it's a nice to have, maybe it's an extra credit assignment. And that's not going to be true anymore because things are changing too fast. Our workforce needs to skill up, and we need to be competitive, not only in the US, but around the world. And so workforce development is going to be huge over the next, I think, several decades. And healthcare leaders have a huge opportunity to really understand what it takes to train their teams and to ensure that they have the skills and competencies required to do their work well.
Wonderful. It's a lot to look forward to.
It is. It is. I think, like I said, if there's a will, there's a way. And I think it is very important. And our patients and our families who are patients and our friends are counting on us to do the right thing. And I believe that we can. And I believe that we will.
Thanks for tuning into this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and follow Managed Healthcare Executive on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. For more information on Managed Healthcare Executive, visit our website at www.managedhealthcareexecutive.com.